sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram. Stunt me, you're destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam. Put some respect on my name. Sick like Cobain, click and I bang. Y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name. What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. Now, on today's episode, we have got on a former Republican Congress candidate, and she is also the founder of Red Renaissance. And of course, this is Kimberly Klasick. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks again for having me. I really appreciate it.
No doubt. I've been looking forward to this for a while. So I've done a very brief intro right there, but for people who may not be familiar with who you are, tell them a little bit about you.
Yeah. So, you know, I ran for Congress this last time around in Maryland's Congressional District number 7. I took on the head or the former head of the NAACP, and he was also the former congressman 30 years ago in that district. So we went up against the Democrat machine. It was a plus 30D district. So we knew it was going to be hard. But we thought, you know what, at some point in time, you got to start chipping away. We came out with a campaign ad that luckily went viral, something definitely, you know, you can't plan to go viral. We got lucky there. And it caught the attention of the president of the United States at the time, President Trump. And then, you know, with that, we were able to speak at the RNC convention. You know, we raised a lot of money because of the ad, because President Trump talked about it. Again, we weren't successful in our bid. But we did pretty well. You know, we chipped away at it. We went from 3,000 votes that are usually collected by a Republican in Baltimore City to over 13,000. So we feel that, you know what, this is something that we should be doing across the country. The Republicans, you know, they neglect or ignore, I guess you could say, urban areas, and they've been doing it a long time. Yeah. And anyone that saw the Senate Georgia runoff races, you would see that Georgia was won because of the predominantly Black areas like the city of Atlanta. And so if Republicans want to continue to win seats, they're going to have to realize that, you know what, you've got to engage the Black community, whether they want to or not. So, you know, that's why I started Red Renaissance. We're going to have that roll out next month. But we'll be recruiting candidates in urban areas. It doesn't matter what color they are, you know, just some people that have hopefully grown up there, that love their cities, and that want to make a difference and a change, and of course have conservative values. So, you know, that's what we're going to be doing, like I said, starting next month, and hopefully we'll flip the house in 2022.
Yeah. Out of curiosity, when you say a plus 30D district, what does that actually mean? As an Englishman, that doesn't mean anything to me. So what does that mean?
Yeah. So let's see, for Republicans versus Democrats, I guess you could say, for every 30 Democrats, there's one Republican.
Oh, right. You know, okay.
It's to win is just a ridiculous, insane idea. And I was even told when we started to run in this race, they said Jesus Christ couldn't win this race as a Republican. so why would you try such a thing? I don't know. But, you know, I guess for me, my philosophy is if we don't try, we're never going to win. And so at some point in time, you've got to try it, not just say, hey, you know what? I give up over there. We know we're not going to engage them. That's not the way to go, you know, especially if you want to, you know, continue with the conservative movement. You know, at some point in time, these blue districts are going to take over the red districts and we won't have any conservative districts left, you know. And so we've got to start saying, look, we've got to do more. As we saw in Georgia, Stacey Abrams, whether people want to admit it or not, she registered over 800,000 voters after the 2 years that she lost her gubernatorial race. And that is why Georgia went blue, you know, and so we got to do the same.
No doubt. Why do you think it is that pretty much every major city in the U.S. is blue? Do you think that's just, I mean, I know on a global level, most large cities do tend to be sort of more liberal leaning, even here in the U.K. Of course, if you look at somewhere like London, and I know it's the same in lots of other countries, but in the U.S. specifically, why do you think it is that the Democrats have such a stranglehold on literally every big city? I mean, I'm not sure. I don't even know what the largest Republican city is, but it seems like they're all Democrat and they have been for many, many years. So in your opinion, why do you think that is?
Yeah, so Republican city, I guess in the US would be San Diego, is under a Republican mayor right now. And they're doing pretty well, as we know. But yeah, no, so I think it's because Democrats have always put themselves out there as the party that's for social good, right? They're the party that's for the poor, they're the party that's for civil rights, they're the party that's for the Black community. That's kind of what they do each and every election cycle. But unfortunately, it's just not true. You know, I myself am a Republican, like you said earlier, you know, let people know who you are. For the past 8 years, I ran a nonprofit doing workforce development in Baltimore City. And so we've helped over 200 women become gainfully employed. Over 30% went on to be financially independent. And we did that without any grants, any help, or anything from the city. It was just something that we focused on and got done because we knew people needed jobs. And so for us, it's kind of like as Republicans, I guess we don't talk about a lot, you know, the good that we do in the communities. And we don't talk a lot about, you know, how we are for things being equal and fair. And so I even say all the time, you know, Republicans do a poor job at letting the gay community know that they're welcomed in our party. You never see a lot of Republicans talking about, you know, we love the trans community, we love the gay, lesbian, you know, queer community. You never hear that. And a lot of that is because we don't play identity politics. You know, that's just not our thing. But, you know, they take it as not being welcomed, whereas Democrats talk about them all the time. So I think that's what it is. You know, you see these major cities that have all these different communities, and Democrats are so good at playing identity politics, where I think that's why they always veer towards them.
It's something I've thought for many, many years, and I think this goes beyond the US, but I think in the US especially, you know, I think the Republicans have more substance, but the Democrats have better branding, right? Like the branding
That's
is just
correct.
the whether or not it's reality, the notion that they're the party for Black people or they're the party for women or for minorities or whatever, like I don't believe it, right? I mean, I'm an outsider. It doesn't really matter like to me directly, but based on what I see, especially given that some of these areas have been run by Democrats for decades. Decades and decades and decades, and it's like I'm very much a actions speak louder than words guy. So it's like, okay, yeah, you can play all the lip service. It's not hard for a politician to go out there and say, oh yeah, like, you know, talk to this community and this minority and that minority and whatever. But I'm like, okay, but what are you doing? What have you done? Right? You've had 20 years, you've had 30 years in this area, and I'm not seeing a lot of tangible things, but it seems like, you know, that's how I view things. I guess it's how you view things, but it does seem like a lot of people do really care about the branding and the sort of feeling and the optics and that kind of stuff. So, how do you think that Republicans in general can improve that, shall we say, branding without playing the same identity politics game? And, you know, making it clear that, yo, this message is for everybody, but without doing that thing of, okay, speaking to this these people and these people and these people and splitting everybody up in that same way. Do you think that, how can that be done? Is it possible?
That's a great question. You know, here in the States, we call it pandering. You know, that's what they do. But I think now we're at a point where it's gone so far that we might have to, you know, dive into the identity politics just a little bit to kind of regain control and pull it back, and letting people know, look, you know, just because you are trans, just because you are Black, just because you are Hispanic, that, you know, if we want to treat you all equally as we do, then, you know, just understand you're all part of, you know, the United States. You're all constituents, you're all residents. Not everyone's American citizen. You know, hopefully they're on a pathway to citizenship, but, you know, you're all part of this country and we all want to work together. But, you know, this has been going on for decades of this pandering. And so people have really broken themselves off to groups. As you know, there's a rainbow flag for the gay community, you know. Everyone looks at the American flag as part of the conservative movement, right?
Yeah, it's
So
really
there's all
interesting.
these even different flags, like, you know, here's my land, here's your land. You know, but we don't get together enough and say, look, you know, this is, we're all in the same boat here. You know, we're all riding it out. And so how we pull it back, I don't know. I had this conversation with my manager just the other day. You know, for me and my race, what we said to the donors is not the same message we could give the voters. But I'm the kind of person where I didn't switch it up. You know, like this is what I'm saying. Here is my message. I'm not a politician. This is exactly what I plan to do. Whereas the voters wanted me to be more emotional, right? The voters wanted me to distance myself from President Trump because they didn't like the way he spoke. And I'm like, well, President Trump is the only guy that is presenting a plan for the inner cities. And we see that even today, Joe Biden, you know, they have yet to present a plan for any of the inner cities. And Baltimore needs a plan. They announced this morning, I retweeted it on my Twitter feed, 15,000 vacant homes now in Baltimore City. So, you know, the vacancies are going up. You know, we're having less and less job opportunities. People are leaving the city. The schools are getting worse. There's no plan in Baltimore. You know, there's no hope in sight. Our homicide rate is through the roof, you know, shootings, everything. And so for me, I ran on, look, guys, where we're going right now, we're not going to survive on this route 10 years from now. And for some reason, you know, they wanted me to really be like, hey, guys, you know, very emotional, you know, kid gloves. Hey, guys, this is what we need. And da-da-da. You know what I mean? They didn't want someone, I think, that's stern. Whereas donors, and we raised over $8.4 million, donors want someone to say, look, we're bringing manufacturing back. We're using the port. We're going to do it this way, da-da-da-da-da. And so, unfortunately, I had, you know, the same message for both. And I guess I should have broken up and been a little bit more persuasive and kinder in my message to the voters.
Yeah, I think it's hard because I think politics is an ongoing battle of, like, stuff that does good versus stuff that feels good.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes those things can be aligned, but oftentimes, you know, a lot of people are very emotionally sensitive. I'm not that kind of person. So sometimes even when I say things, people take it the wrong way, or they think I'm attacking someone when I'm not. And I'm like, no, I'm very much a straight talker. And I care about what does good rather than what feels good. And I think it's really interesting. I mean, I remember when you put out that campaign ad, which, you know, really struck a chord. I know a lot of people like the, you know, cool, like, you know, she's there, you know, she's looking good. She's got, you know, and then she's, you know, showing the juxtaposition, you know, actually showing parts of the city and stuff like that. But I also saw some of the negative feedback, right? Even some of the negative feedback from Black Americans, right? And yeah. I'm reading through it, and some of it is some of the things, you know, that get said about me, but I'm reading things, you know, people saying like, oh, this is an attack on Black Americans. This is an attack on Black community. This is an attack on the city of Baltimore. So some people take every criticism or every pointing out of something that could be improved as an attack. And I don't know, it's difficult to know how to kind of get through to people like that, because everyone has their different ways of communication. And I when I watch that, I don't think, oh, this is an attack. I think this is someone who's being honest and highlighting some of the issues, which everybody knows exists, whether or not you want to admit it. People know these issues exist. And rather than just trying to bury it and act like, yep, everything is fine, you're just showing it, you know? I don't even really know what the question is there, but how do you kind of, I don't know, how do you reach people when they see everything as an attack on their identity or their city and things like that? How do you bring those messages together of, I don't know, maybe doing good and feeling good? It's a challenge. Yeah.
It's definitely a challenge. I mean, you know, I didn't look at it as an attack. Like, of course, you said, I was pointing out the facts. I said, yeah, look, Baltimore has 20% poverty rate. Baltimore has 10 times the national average as far as the murder rate. You know, it was all facts. So none of it was attacking it. But for me, I look at those individuals and I say, look, if you don't like how your city is represented by the facts, then why not roll your sleeves up and figure out how to change it? You know, don't just, like you said, kind of sweep it under the rug and act like it's not happening, because it's definitely happening. And then a lot of the feedback I got, they said, oh, you know, now people think Baltimore City is, you know, looks crazy, and we got this and we got that. I'm like, a lot of people saw The Wire, okay?
Yeah.
People already knew what Baltimore looked like.
Yeah.
Okay, this is no secret, right? And then we had the riots back in 2015. Senator Bernie Sanders came to town and said, wow, this looks like a third world country. But unfortunately, you know, he just then, once the care was left, he turned around, went back to D.C., and nobody still did anything. And so that was my problem. My issue was like, wow, people know that there are issues here, but nobody wants to present a solution, right? And this is a predominantly Black city. I look at that as racism. I look at that as racism. You come to town, you see how bad it is, and you don't even offer to help and offer any solutions whatsoever. At that time, Congressman Cummings was in office, a Black man himself, and then did nothing, right? He was there for 30 years. For 30 years, he allowed it to get that way. And we've been under Democrat control for over 50 years. So many, many decades. But yeah, you know, I got attacked about it. People wanted solutions. My second video came out. We offered solutions in that video. Believe it or not, we only did about 6 million views, right? The first video that everybody hated, about 30 million views. Yeah. We actually presented solutions and what I was going to do, the plan, only 6 million views. So, you know, that's kind of how social media works, right? Everybody likes the bad stuff. That's what gets the ratings. But, you know, my opponent, he never presented any solutions to any problems. And they still said, I'm going to vote for him. And so for me, it's kind of like, wow, do you even want a solution? Do you even want a change? You know, some people did. 93,000 people voted for us. And that's why I'm not going to give up.
No doubt. We know this. And so one, I have a massive respect for, you know, like for going for it. I think with some of these cities, I mean, there's a lot of cities in the U.S. where any Republican or independent candidate, like really, it's such an uphill battle. It's such an uphill battle. But if people give up before they even try, then, you know, stuff is never going to change. That 50 years will end up becoming 60 years, 70 years, 80 years, 100 years. And, you know, nothing will ever change. But coming back to what we were saying before about the branding and the messaging, I think it's, you know, working out how over time people can kind of chip away at that. Because I think, look, whether the government is Republican or is Democrat, I think ultimately people want to live in a safe community. People don't want crime rates going up. People do want job opportunities. People don't want like masses of vacant housing or homeless people or drug problems, all of that, you know, regardless of what side of the aisle someone is on. We may disagree on how best to resolve it, but I'm not seeing people out there saying, okay, we want bad things to go up. So I want to run it back a little bit. How did you even get involved in politics?
Yeah. So crazy story here. Like I said, I was, you know, working with my nonprofit, and I noticed as I was getting a lot of the women employed and sending them to different, we have job training programs within the cities. So they would help with their resumes, all this good stuff. But I noticed that there were a lot of obstacles despite trying to get someone employed for free. I'll never forget the day that I got a call from the mayor's office. It was about 2014. They knew that we had a bunch of clothes on hand. One of their career centers at Mondawmin Mall, which was actually featured during the Freddie Gray riots. That was the mall that everybody went in and looted. But the career center there called us and said, look, we have a backlog of women that need clothes for interviews. Can you help us? And I said, absolutely, I can help you, right? So we posted it on Facebook. Hey, we need a bunch of volunteers ASAP because we got to get these people dressed. They have interviews coming up and we don't want to miss the mark. The very next morning, I got another call from the mayor's office in City Hall. And they said, you need to take down that post. It looks like that we're partners with you. We're not partners with you. And at this time, everyone knew I was a Republican, right? I've been a Republican point for over 5 years. And so I said, wait, you want to take down a post asking people to help for free to get people dressed for job interviews? And you guys called me, right? And then the guy's like, well, no, that was a different office. I don't know why they called you, blah, 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 blah. But we could still use your clothing if you could send it over. I said, okay, this has got to be a joke, right?
Yeah.
So I hung up the phone. I took down the post. I then put up a post explaining what just happened. Fast forward, you know, that mayor was indicted for pay to play. That was Mayor Pugh. That was her administration. That was her office that called me. The guy that called me to take down the post was also indicted, and their job training program was raided by the FBI. Oh, I'm wow. like, well, that's the Gary I know.
Yeah.
So it's like, I knew that there were obstacles, and that's why it made me keep getting involved. Like, wow, what else is going on? Why don't they want people to get employed, right? We're helping them for free. And so, yeah, I started really combing into things. We have something called the Youth Fund, $25 million. That money, I think 12 million of it hit the streets. The other millions are missing still to this day, or they're just not using them. But there's a lot of youth programs that could use that funding. Mm-hmm. So right now they're kind of using it as a slush fund. They took 6 million of it and distributed it in $400 gift cards. You know, once you put it in gift cards, you can't follow it, right? The accountability is lost. And we had another mayor that was indicted for stealing gift cards a couple of years ago also. Her name was Julie Dixon. It was like the same corruption over and over again.
Yeah.
And so that's why I got involved. I originally started volunteering on Capitol Hill. I thought, you know what? I would love to see how this thing works. You know, I don't want to get paid for it. You know, this is me learning. So it's like on the job training kind of deal. And this is when the Benghazi committee hearings were going on. I don't know if you remember that, where Hillary Clinton was on trial. Congressman Trey Gowdy was at the head of it. And I was at that time writing for a blog called Politichicks. And I said, you know what? If I'm going to contribute to this blog site, I'm here in D.C., I'm here at the Capitol, I'm going to go get a great interview, right? I just, you know, that's me. I'm like, I'm going to take the initiative. So I used my volunteer badge, which you could also use as a staffer badge. And I just walked down. I'm walking through the building like I should be there, right?
Yeah.
I walk right in Trey Gowdy's office and I say, look, you know, I would love to interview Congressman Trey Gowdy. They were like, who the heck are you? All right. And I'm like, I'm Kim Klasick, you know, with Politichicks. And at that time, it just so happened Trey Gowdy was coming out of his office and he said, look, I got time. Mm. And we sat down, had the interview. Because of that interview, One American News was like, wow, how'd you get in touch with Trey Gowdy? And I was like, I just walked in, you know? And so they took it. They had me on for interviews. I went to the Roland Martin show. Fox News, and that's kind of like where all this started. I myself am a college dropout. College just was not for me. I wanted to go straight to work. You know, with my nonprofit Potential Me, ended up being an employer, right? I had people on the payroll. I know what it's like when you're almost like, am I gonna make payroll this week? I don't know, you know, and you got all these people depending on you. And I think when you're in political or in office in general, it's kind of like running a business. And sometimes I see some of these elected officials, like our mayor right now in Baltimore City, he's never had a real job. Yeah. You know, our restaurants are still closed. The city will probably end up going bankrupt, but he doesn't get it, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, that's why I got involved in politics. And that's how I really just walked through the door and said, hi, I'm Kim.
Yeah, that's cool. Have you always been someone who's more conservative leaning, or are you someone who sort of shifted politically over time?
No, pretty conservative. My dad, he was conservative. You know, he was a registered Democrat. He usually voted Democrat, but he voted usually for the person rather than the party. And so I kind of learned that from him. When I first started going on TV and doing media, he would watch, even if it was like at midnight, you know, shows, those obscure shows, wherever you can get in. He would watch and he would then call me right after and says, okay, so this is what I heard you say. You know, you could have got back on this debate and you could have you know what I mean? Because I didn't go to school for any of this, right? Yeah, and so my dad was kind of walking me through it. And I, you know, appreciate him every single day for doing that. He unfortunately passed away back in 2019. But, you know, he was my number one fan. And, you know, but I think when you have somebody in your life that really is like a mentor to you, that really explains things to you, you know, he grew up in foster care. He ended up going to college. You know, not many people in his family did. He went to college. He ended up going on to be an executive at IBM. So he went from foster care to an executive at IBM. And he said, you know what, Kim? It's because I never played the victim. He said, I could have done that. I could have taken that route because many of my friends did. But I said, you know what? I know working hard in this country will get me where I want to go. And so I learned a lot of it from my dad.
No, that's so, you know, what he said there, that's just so true. It's so real. You know, we just live in this time and it's bizarre to see, especially when it's the USA. Like, look, I know every country has its problems. I know the USA does have some major problems, and there is a lot of disparity, and there are certain areas which don't really look so much like a first world country, right? Or don't look like the richest, most country with the most opportunity in the world. I'm aware that that exists. But at the same time, on a global level and on a historic level, I don't think that, you know, I really don't think like, certainly a lot, I don't think maybe even most Americans realize just how much better off they are than almost anybody to ever walk the planet. Even if in the American society, you're not starting out in a great place, the opportunities and the potential for upward mobility compared to people who are born in so many other parts of the world are just incredible. And there are millions and millions of people who have risen, whether they came over as immigrants and started from nothing and then built themselves up to success, or they were born in the USA and, you know, they started out, I don't know, in the projects, or started out in a trailer park and then they built themselves up to success. And there are countries, there are places where that is, there are places where unless you can get out of the nation, that's virtually impossible. Like you're just stuck at whatever class you were born at. You're kind of just stuck there unless you get like some really massive luck or some big opportunity comes your way. And I think it's a shame that so many people in the modern West don't fully appreciate and understand that. And this is not saying, like I said, it's not saying that there are no problems, far from it. But I just think when you have that level of that perspective, then people realize, oh, okay, actually, sure, it's not perfect, but compared to all these other billions of people, it's still pretty darn good. And if I work hard and I take personal responsibility and I make good decisions, I can rise from this station, you know? And I think that's such an important message that gets lost.
Oh, it gets lost every single day, man. It is a blessing to be here in the U.S. You know, but what's interesting, and I don't know if it was you that tweeted this out. It might have been you. Somebody said, look, hey, America, there's other countries out here.
Sounds like me. Yeah, that was me. That was me.
That's the thing. Here in America, we hardly hear about other countries and what's going on. You have to do your due diligence to really find out what's going on in other countries and how others are living. Right now, even on the news, there's like this thing that's like 60 seconds around the world is what they say. So they literally cover the rest of the world in 60 seconds. And it's hilarious to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, but that's what people are seeing. And so we have a lot of individuals that just rely on the media for information. And so they have no idea, you know, they're just being fed all the time. You know, America's racist. Here's what's going on in America today. Mm-hmm. But they're never seeing what else is going on in the world. And so, you know what? Maybe there's an opening there. Maybe we need to really push for more people to talk about what's going on in other countries so Americans know how lucky they are to be here. You know, all the time I hear the same old story. You know, Black people are attacked by the police because they are just Black. I unfortunately do not believe this, okay? they hate me for it. But I say, look, I have many, many immigrant friends from Africa. By all appearances, they are Black. They are lawyers. They are doctors. They are judges. They are doing their thing. They come here, they value education, and they make it. And you know what? Whenever we see a hashtag, you know, name, you never see a hashtag African name, right? That we're saying, oh, you know, police, we need justice, da-da-da. I'm not saying these don't happen, but there's never hashtag an African name because it's all about the culture, you know, what we value. You know, whenever you hear the story, when you further investigate it, you know, there was a crime being committed, right? It's totally different. And I don't think people really understand it. It's some of our problems are cultural.
Yes. Yes.
African immigrants come here. They value education. They value their family structure. They keep themselves out of trouble and they go on to do great things. I think Nigerians right now, as far as wealth and education, are number one here in America.
We're repping.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're number one here in America. you know, and they are by all appearances black like myself.
Of course, of course. So. It's really interesting. Like a couple things you said there. Another one was that you mentioned the whole situation with police and police brutality. I mean, I don't know if you saw last year where they had the hashtag NSARS trending, and that was quite a big global trend, and that was about the police brutality in Nigeria. Right. So my family is my family is originally from Nigeria. Right. And it's really interesting because, again, in the Western world, especially in the U.S., the whole police brutality or police killing problem is it's always framed as a racial issue. Right. And it's really interesting because, again, being someone who's originally from Nigeria and is seeing what's going on over there, it's like, whoa, this is like a big police brutality issue going on. But this is in a country that's like 99% black. Right. The police officers are black. The people they're brutalizing are black. Right. It's and there are so many things in the USA that get framed as racial issues when race is not the main point. But the narrative is always black and white, race, 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 whereas that's not, you know, some there are situations where that's a factor. But I'm like, yo, like look in other again, if you look at other countries, you see, oh, OK, this is like. Certain some of these police officers are on a power trip and are out of control problem. Yeah. This is not, you know, this is we're seeing black people brutalizing black people, right? So this is not so again, I think it's interesting how again with the wider perspective you can see you can also just see how people get manipulated, right? How people get sort of divided along certain lines. And I mean I often say in Nigeria, there are so in Nigeria there's lots of different tribes and ethnic groups, right? And some of the, this isn't just Nigeria, but with lots of African countries and Asian countries and parts of the Middle East, et cetera, the hostility and division and barriers between ethnic groups, which to an outsider, the people look like they could be brother and sister, right? Like you can't, right? If you go to Nigeria, you'll struggle to see the difference between, you know, like a Yoruba person, an Igbo person, someone from Delta, et cetera. But within, so the, how would I put it? The animosity between two members of two different ethnicities within the same country in parts of Africa is much greater than any animosity or hostility, say, between black and white Americans. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean? So it's like human beings are tribal, like the, you know, tribalism can be a problem, but I just think it's fascinating how in the West, it's always framed along like a racial line, whereas in lots of other places, you realize, oh, actually, this is not, it's not about, it's not about skin color because everyone's looking the same here. This is about, you know, ethnicity, or it's just about silly tribalism, or it's about some ancient sort of thing that's just carried over into the modern day and stuff like that. And I think, again, I think if people could get over, could see that perspective, then they'd realize, oh, actually, we're kind of being played here, right? Yeah. You know, like we're kind of being played and being made to think that this is not, this is something that it's not really, right? So people are there obsessing over black versus white, white versus black, whatever. And it's like, no, that's the media largely doing that to you. Right. And yes, there is stuff in history. You know, there's an overhang from history, of course, especially in the USA. But it's like people keep, people keep playing into it, you know, people get keep getting manipulated into it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, here we don't understand sometimes the difference between racism and classism. We seem to miss that mark a lot. But, you know, just like you were saying in Nigeria, I actually tried to attempt to explain what was going on in Cameroon during my race. Right. And I was like, you know, the military's coming in, they're brutalizing and killing a lot of the village people, blah, 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 blah. Do you know that somebody actually wrote on my tweet, you're not running there. Stick to America. I'm like, I'm trying to tell you. Right? I'm like, what? So I was actually getting beat up for mentioning Cameroon. I'm like, no, you guys, you're missing the point here. Yeah. You know, this is what's going on in other countries. And like you said, there's tribalism. And I would talk about the fact that sometimes what we're dealing with is classism, and sometimes they don't see it. I always refer back to an MLK speech. It was a knock before midnight, And it was when the elites, or I guess you could say some of the elites, the elite Blacks in the different churches, and those that were, you know, very career oriented, high up, they were then taking advantage of those that weren't so elite, but they are Black as well. Mm-hmm. And so he talked about how it was going to be, a, you know, greater and greater, and the balance would be greater as we went along. And that's kind of what you see in Baltimore City. You know, mm-hmm. The mayors have been Black, city council's Black. Everyone in charge is Black. The state's attorney's Black. The police yeah. commissioner's Black. A lot of the police officers are Black. But they still talk about this white boogeyman. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, everyone here now is Black, guys. Right. Yeah. So now we got to get past that. What is the real issue? And it's corruption. Mm-hmm. But we never get to that point, and we never get to that point of the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think is the best way to address this? I mean, one thing I get criticized the most for, I don't really care about it. I don't mind criticism, but one thing I get criticized the most for, right, of course, being an outsider, being as someone who's not from the USA, you know, it's funny. There are thousands of Americans who love the fact that I share my view on some of the things going on in the US. And then there are also people who like, yeah, thank you. And then there are also people who hate it and are like, you're not from here. You kind of don't have a right to speak on it, right? But how do you think, again, what's the way forward on this? It sometimes it feels to me almost like, you know, it's something I've said before. Sometimes I say human beings are divided because they want to be, right? And it does feel that way sometimes, because on one hand, someone will be talking about unity, and then 2 seconds later, they're throwing people into these little boxes with no nuance, and they're, you know, it's Black people this and white people that and men this and women that and straight people that and LGBT that. And it is just fragmenting everything. And again, it's something that seems, it's not unique to the USA at all. But one big difference I noticed between the UK and the USA, and I've spoken about this in a few podcasts, is that it fascinates me that in the US, people say Black American, white American, African American, Latino American, Asian American. In the UK, we just say British.
Yeah.
Right? So in the UK, you'll never hear someone call me African British or even Black British. You won't hear them say Asian British. Like, everyone just says British. And it's such a small thing, but I think it's very revealing of the way, like, culturally and socially and politically, the two countries are quite different. In the USA, you hear people talk about the Black vote.
Yeah.
In the UK, I've never heard that term in the UK. I've never heard a politician say, oh, we're trying to win the Black vote, or we're trying to, you know, it's really fascinating to me. So I'm just like, yeah, in the UK, there's more of a class thing, perhaps, than there is a racial thing.
Yeah, no, that's what we do best here. We do identity politics better than anybody, you know. Unfortunately, you know, this is something I see usually push in the Democrat Party, but Republicans, we get roped into saying the same thing because that's always the conversation, right? That's what we hear all the time. And then we're like, oh, wait, we can get the Black vote too, you know. So we're in that same bucket in a way, even though we truly don't want to be. It's interesting that, you know, thank you for pointing that out too. I love that you give your opinion. Love the outside perspective. This is what I got beat up for all the time, you know, in my race. You know, they're like, well, you really want to help West Baltimore, but you're not from West Baltimore. Mm. I'm like, no, I'm not from West Baltimore. I am an outsider with an outside perspective saying, look, guys, this is what's going on here clearly, because the rest of the state of Maryland has it together, right? Mm-hmm. For some reason, Baltimore City can't get it together. And we on the outside can give our perspective and say, look, this is what's going on. Whereas people on the inside are like, well, you're not from here. And I'm like, well, you guys have been on the inside your whole lives and you never got out, right? And so to me, it's like, obviously, you need other perspectives to come in and say, look, here's what's going on. Here's what we do differently over in Baltimore County. And in District 7, it encompasses Baltimore City, Baltimore County, and Howard County. So, you know, all of these districts have other counties within them. But, you know, when it comes to Baltimore City, they are very tribal. They want you to be from Baltimore City. Yeah. Or you have no, you know, you have no business representing them all at all. So yeah, we do that best here. I wish we didn't do it, but I don't know how we get out of it. I really don't, because every time we bring it up, people were saying, well, that's how it should be. You know, even right now, people talk about what's the Black agenda, you know, what's the Black agenda. And I say, you know, we need an agenda for inner cities, for rural areas, because they're different. Right. Where other people are like, well, no, you need a Black agenda. And I'm like, look, if we're all winning, we're all winning. Right. Whether you're Black, white, it doesn't matter. We need an agenda to make sure corruption stops so that we can make sure. And I tell people all the time, look at the cities that are really failing are the cities that lost a lot of manufacturing jobs. When manufacturing went overseas, and I thank NATO for this, when manufacturing went overseas, that is what hurt us the most. Baltimore City was a manufacturing powerhouse. Detroit was a manufacturing powerhouse. And these, you know, all of those cities have been what were hit the hardest. And, you know, everyone talks about white flight. That was a thing. But white people, they, you know, exited the cities after manufacturing left. And unfortunately, a lot of Black residents weren't able to move, right? They couldn't afford to move. And so, we can talk about white flight, but we never talk about the root, right? Yes. I say all the time, remember that, I don't know if you saw the case with Eric Garner, I can't breathe.
Yes.
Choked in New York City. People talk about police brutality with that one. And I'm like, well, look, let's talk about why the fact that he was choked and the police were called in the first place. You know, not being able to sell loose cigarettes in New York City is a Democrat policy.
Yeah.
That is why the police were called. Yeah. I mean, can you not sell loose cigarettes? I don't know why this is such a huge deal, but apparently it is. But that is why he was in that situation. So it's, you know, we never get to the root of the problem. We get very surface, and then we always just stop when we get to the race.
Yes. Yeah. I think the, you know, there's an analogy I use for this, and I can understand why people kind of get annoyed if someone from like who's deemed an outsider is kind of commenting on their thing, because people have an emotional attachment there. But the analogy I also use is sometimes I think, so if you imagine you have like a really big painting and you're standing like a foot away from it, then you can't see the painting properly, right? You're just seeing like a part of it. But actually, if you take several steps back, then you can see the bigger picture. And I think actually sometimes the value of getting outside opinions and perspectives is because like I'm emotionally detached from Baltimore, right? Like I haven't actually been there before. I will definitely visit, but
let us get the crime down.
You know, like my only emotional attachment to it is on like a human level. And like, you know, I don't want to see people getting stabbed, shot, murdered, being homeless, whatever, in any place. Right. I don't want to see that anywhere. But outside of that, I'm not emotionally connected. So I when I look at it, I don't have a dog in the fight. I'm just kind of like, yo, like, what's going on here? I mean, when I went to the States in 2019, I went to 10 different cities. I went to Los Angeles. I went to San Francisco. When I was in those cities, I was like, I'd never seen homelessness and rampant drug abuse like I'd seen in those two cities in my life. There's nothing like that in the UK. There's nothing in the UK that rivals the homeless problem of LA or San Francisco. So as an outsider, I'm there like, oh my gosh, like what's going on here? Isn't this like the most expensive city in the US? Like, how have you got people injecting heroin and smoking crack in broad daylight on the street? I've never in my life seen that before. So I'm just there like, yo, this is crazy. And then some people were like, yeah, well, you know, you're not from, I'm like, yeah, I'm not from here, which is like, that's kind of the point. Like, this is not normal. You guys shouldn't accept, you should not be okay with this. You should not be okay with this. You can go to any UK city. Yes, you will see homeless people, but you won't see people shooting drugs on the street. Like, that's just not, it's not tolerated. It's not acceptable. You can't just set up a tent city wherever you want. Like, we don't do that here. So what I did want to ask you about though, cause I know we've talked about problems, but what do you think are the solutions? So for a city like Baltimore or a city like Chicago or some of these other inner city areas, what do you think are some real tangible solutions?
Yeah. Manufacturing, you know, this was like my number one thing, you know, talking about it in the race. We saw what was going on with the pandemic and the coronavirus, right? We saw that the billion-dollar medical equipment industry was not in the United States. We have the best hospitals and the best doctors, but we had to wait for, you know, whether it was the PPE, right? I think there was a couple of even GMs stepped up, opened up a couple of factories as fast as they could so they can start making the mask. You know, they immediately we had to get in production. And that is because we allowed manufacturing to leave back in the 80s and the 90s, which, again, I said devastated a lot of our cities. Mm. If we could bring manufacturing back and perhaps starting with the medical equipment industry, that would be amazing. Like, think about even right now, we're doing the vaccine. A lot of our syringes are coming in from other countries, right? We should have the ability to make our own syringes here. You know, these are careers where you could do on the job career training and get people to work and have them making good money immediately. Right now, we even have a trucker shortage. You know, it doesn't take much to get your CDL license. This is something that I looked into. I was talking to different companies. You can get your CDL license. It's like $2,000 a person. They'll do the on behind the wheel training, and those truckers go on to make $60,000 to $70,000 a year. Mm-hmm. We have a ton of space and manufacturing space where we can put the warehouses. You know, we can line the trucks up right in Baltimore. So basically, if we could just bring manufacturing back, we would kill it. We would kill it, and we can get people trained easily. It would be effective, and then we could also, you know, complement some of the great hospitals that we have. We have Johns Hopkins right in Baltimore, right? Why not have the medical equipment industry right in their backyard? It only just makes sense. And so for me, we now have the second largest port in the country. They dug out deeper, right? They dug it deeper where we now are in, you know, in the playing field. Before, I think it was just Connecticut. They have the submarines that come in. We now have the ability to bring submarines in, which also creates jobs. We could literally mimic what Connecticut is doing and bring Baltimore City right back. They do stuff with wind energy off the side of their port as well. You know, we talk about going green, right? Another way to do it. There's so many easy things to do and fixes, but it takes leadership to want to do these things, right? It's going to take a little bit of investment. It's going to take, you know, getting investors in town and saying, okay, here's what we could do. Here's what we offer. Here's how we can work alongside you to help get it done. We want to hire locals, right? We want to train individuals that live here. There are so many people that want to work and have no opportunity to do so. And it's heartbreaking. And so that's my thing. We push manufacturing back to Baltimore City. It's over. It's a done deal. Right. Then we can really focus on our education system. We have 35 failing schools in Maryland. 23 of them are in Baltimore City.
Wow.
We have the third highest per pupil spending in the country. Right. Right now we're getting, I think it's like $16,000 a head or something.
Okay.
How could you get this much money and the kids are graduating unable to read or write?
Why is that happening, do you think?
Well, a lot of it is mismanagement of funds, right? Okay. The administrators, our CEO of our public schools makes $375,000 a year. Kids can't read or write, okay? Yep. You know, she just got a raise. It was $350. There's issues here, right? A lot of the administrators make a ton of money. A lot of the teachers are not happy. If they go through and talk to these teachers individually, they're not happy. You got the teachers union, right? They're calling all the shots. And then you still have teachers that are buying school supplies for their students in their classrooms. You got schools without heating, air conditioning. They still got lead pipes. They can't drink out of the water fountains. It's unbelievable. And it's literally because of those that are managing the funds. They're terrible at it.
It's such a shame, you know. And what's really interesting is, like, those proposed solutions and these ideas, these are not, you know, in any traditional sense, these are not even, like, shall we say, left wing or right wing things, right? So, like, whether someone's more left leaning or more right leaning, I don't see why someone should oppose to those ideas or those proposals. You know what I mean? It's just like, okay, yeah, we want better education, we need more jobs, we need more employment, we don't want, you know, we don't want everything being shipped off abroad with no, I don't know, with no checks and balances, just because it's, you know, it's interesting to me because I'm very much like a free market capitalist. But again, on an international level, I understand, like, okay, look, there are some areas and places that are dependent on certain jobs and manufacturing. So, you know, having a country like the USA or the UK be like 80% reliant on China for like all of their supplies, it like is insane. Like, it's obviously insane, especially after the past year, right? You know, like, that's where this whole thing starts. And then people are relying on that same nation to get their medical products and their medical supplies. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is like, I don't even know the word to use. I'm just like, this
it's
is
stupid.
Not,
the word is
this
stupid.
Is stupid. Yeah. I'm just like, this is not, stupid. This is, yeah. I'm like, and it's almost like warfare. It's like warfare without any bullets being fired. You know what I mean? It's almost like, wow. I mean, I think in the last year, the only large economy in the world that has grown is China, right?
Yeah.
And I just think it's amazing that, like, oh wow, okay, this is the epicenter of all of this, and then they're the ones who have ended up coming out all right on the other end, whilst the UK is still getting battered, the USA is still getting battered, and somehow everyone is blaming people are blaming Trump. In the UK, people are blaming Boris Johnson, right? People are saying, oh my gosh, Trump is responsible for 400,000 dead Americans, which is so deeply dishonest and unfair. But again, people are emotional and irrational. And I'm just like, you're targeting your aim at the wrong, like, just totally at the wrong place. And, you know, I think a lot of people are terrified of China. I think a lot of people don't want to say anything about China because they're just, you know, they're scared, right? They're cowardly about it. And it's not even about, obviously this is not about like Chinese people or the average citizen or whatever. We're talking about the government, right? The government, they know what they're doing. They're hyper-authoritarian. We know there's all this shady stuff going on. So it's remarkable how people are willing to kind of call out the British government or call out the American government or do all that. But no one wants to be like, can we talk about this? Like, how did this whole thing start? And by the way, how have they had the vaccine since July? And how are they totally open? And the USA is still having all these deaths. The UK is still having all these deaths. Meanwhile, China, with like 1.4 billion people, apparently hasn't had a death since like September or so. Like, I don't believe those numbers anyway, but I don't know. It's there's so many things in my head. I'm just like, what is going on here? Like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
What are we doing?
No, it's wild. And now with Biden in office, you know, they're rewinding or reversing everything that Trump has put in place. Mm-hmm. And I just saw Dr. Fauci announce today that we are now re-engaging with WHO to,
of course.
You know, it's like, I was like, wait a minute, what are we doing, right? And like, I was like, so the people that took all of our money and then really kind of covered up what was going on, right? I was like, wait, what are we doing right now? And he said, oh, it's another great day. I was like, shut up. Is this what we're about to do? This is what we're about to do. And so there's so many people that are like, Dr. Fauci's a hero. And I'm like, wait, what? And it's so wild to me that people just don't do their own due diligence and look at the facts. You know, when you look at the CDC, like you said, it was wildly insane for us to say we have 400,000 deaths and then it's all in President Trump. Meanwhile, they admitted that the number was inflated. Right. You could die in a car accident if you test positive for COVID. Mm-hmm. You died because of COVID. Yep, right. Yep. And so we don't really know those numbers, but they are now admitting that. But of course, that's after President Trump has already walked away.
Yep. Of course. I wasn't there something that came out that said 6% of the, I think it was 6% of the deaths were like purely due to coronavirus. As in people who had no other.
That came out, but of course the media was like, that can't be true. I'm like, wait, do you trust the CDC or you don't? Like, I mean, what are we doing now?
It's so bizarre. It's so bizarre. I mean, I could that whole topic would be a whole different hour. but Kim, what have you got planned for this year and for the future? Are you going to be making another run for Congress, or are you setting your sights elsewhere? What are you up to?
Yeah, so like, you know, Red Renaissance is our PAC, like I said, recruiting candidates across the country. We're going to get that started, like I said, next month. So February is our big launch, because, of course, if we want to take back the House in 22, you know, we need to get on it, right? We got to get candidates going. We're hoping to meet people that, you know, wouldn't really run for office, but want to make a difference.
Okay.
You know, we're not looking really for the politician type. We're not looking for those that are already involved with the establishment. We're looking for just new, fresh faces that are just fed up with the way things are going, with conservative values. So that's going to take a lot of my time. I'm also working on another project where we follow every federal dollar that comes into Baltimore City, which is my favorite. So they're like, yeah, every federal dollar. So hopefully that helps fight the corruption. And then people can see and finally see where this money is going. And the things that I talked about during the race, hopefully they can say, okay, that's what she meant. Mm-hmm. That's where the money's going. This is why we don't have this or that. So hopefully I can show that. And then we're having redistricting done here. So that's great. Unfortunately, I'm sure Maryland District 7 being a plus D 30 district, it's not going to change too much. But at that time, I think we can really take a look at the map and see, you know, do I run again in District 7? Or do I run into another neighboring district that may be a little bit more friendly to a Republican, but we can still do a lot of work in Baltimore? So I don't know. We'll have to see. We left, I think we're at, what, $1.8 million in the bank. So of course I'm going to do something, right? So we're not going to touch that money. We're going to wait and see what happens. And hopefully I do run for office again. My lawyer said, don't announce anything. So.
Okay.
That's all
I'm saying. No doubt. Well, Kim, it's been such an honor to talk to you. I love what you're doing. I know that you inspire a lot of people. I know people over here in the UK who are big fans as well. So however many people you think you're reaching and inspiring more than that.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
You're very welcome. And before we go, where can people find out more about you online?
Yeah. So, of course, Twitter, Kim K Baltimore. If I still have followers left next week, that'd be great. and then, of course, Instagram, Facebook, Kimberly Klasick. And if they go to redrenaissance.com, you'll see our landing page. And then it'll take on its full page. I think it's February 8th. So that'll be a lot of fun.
Awesome. Kim Klasick, thanks for coming on the Real Talk with Zuby show.
Thank you.
With the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame.